Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Feeling lucky? You should be. Meet the new Lucky One Sweet Tea from Miss Peaches, the vodka drink that's positively doing good. Made with real tea and real vodka, non-carbonated, 100 calories. And here's the scoop. Their new sweet tea is the only vodka-based sweet tea on the market. Simple ingredients in a smooth, full flavor that makes it taste just like the real sweet tea. Best part? Every can helps rescue dogs find their forever homes as they work to a goal of donating $1 million to dog rescues in 2026. So if you love true sweet tea, this one's a no-brainer. Pick up a Lucky One sweet tea today and give back one can at a time.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 261. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack, Trill Ballins coming at you today. Midweek podcast reviewing The Nice Guys. The Nice Guys came out a couple years ago. I don't want to call it a cult following, but it continues to pick up more steam year after year as not just being a good movie, being a great movie and one that needs a sequel. So I'm excited to talk about that. That movie has a pretty damn good duo with Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling. So we're going to be doing a duo draft. Drafting the best duos, and it can be headphones and an iPod. What an awful example that was. But you know what I mean. It doesn't have to be movies. It doesn't have to be Turner and Hooch. It doesn't have to be Ross and Rachel. It can be anything you want. It can be food. It can
Ross and Rachel sucks.
I know. Yeah, that'd be bad.
I didn't pick it, but I almost picked Richard and Monica.
See, that
fuck
was
Richard.
I don't know. I've had to reassess my friend's characters because we talked about it before. I've been watching a bunch of the episodes during the day on TBS. And I have to say, before when I was growing up, I think I liked Phoebe, but now I can't stand Phoebe. I can't stand
terrible.
Phoebe. Her character is just, I can't tell if she's stupid or she's just on a different level of intelligence from everyone else.
There's a moron in the show. It's fascinating.
But she has moments of lucidity, which is very weird. But yeah, most of the time she's a moron.
That show, slowly, my favorite thing is that slowly they stop working more and more until the end of the show. Like none of them just go to, like at that, there's a point where there's none of them go to work. Like they just don't work. They just hang out in their apartments. But it's funny because it's on TBS every day and they air in order. They air chronologically. And so Trill will send something to the group and I'll just look up above my desk and I'll see that moment as it's happening. So we're just experiencing friends.
It's hell on earth. Hell on earth for me as a non-friends liker in the group chat.
You just throw it on in the background. And though I will say, Ken Jack did call it out. And for Trill, who's been watching the show now, I said, oh, this is the episode. They're going to do the thing. And there's one thing. There's two things. There's the we're on a break and pivot. And Ken Jack properly said, it's pivot.
Yeah, Trill's like, what's the thing?
And I was like, I didn't realize pivot was a big thing from Friends.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, come on.
I didn't.
Come on.
You know what? I do have to say, like, I enjoyed the charm of the 94 through, like, 96 episodes more than, like, the 99 2000s where I'm at right now. They had to change the show around. You got to get Monica and Chandler in a relationship. And I think those are the two strongest characters.
I do want to say quick, we did open the podcast on a fairly furious note the other day for obvious reasons. A lot of unrest in this country for very justified reasons. And that wasn't a comment and that wasn't an opening
spewing of thoughts just to say we talked about it. We wanted to leave resources for people to educate, learn, listen, also donate, because part of what we said was we felt as though this is a time for people who have not dealt with the problems in this country to be quiet and to listen and to learn and then help take action when action was needed. And it would be kind of pointless for us to go into that and then not leave those resources again with this podcast, because we have this platform. And while I don't know if, you know, this podcast will change the world or anything, I think it would, you know, no action is inaction. And I don't know if that's the proper term. I am an idiot, but I think you guys know what I mean. So we did leave the same links below, the same links to the George Floyd Memorial Fund, also some Black Lives Matter stuff that allow people to go in and learn more, donate, learn more, educate themselves, read up on things, all of that. So all those resources are there. We put them on the description of the last pod, put it in here again. Just wanted to note that before we get into the podcast. Other than that, before we get into news, we'll jump into it. Are we watching anything? I do want to know, I'm starting to rewatch The Office. I know we're critical of people who only ever rewatch The Office, but The Office is one of the best TV comedies ever made. You know what? I'm going to do like 15 minutes. I give myself like 15 minutes during lunch every day to like just watch something. I think I'm just going to go through The Office again. But I am going to stop at some point. I'm not going to finish all the way through. I can't watch like Nelly and triangle iPad and shit. I don't need to watch that.
Yeah, I've come back around on The Office. I've realized I was being a little curmudgeon-y on it, and I do think people talk about it a little less than they did like 2 years ago, so maybe it bothers me a little less now. But yeah, it is a great show up until, I mean, the drop off after Steve Carell left was pretty unbelievable,
significant. And like, again, this is something we've always said whenever we talk about The Office, it's premier comedy. Like, no one is doubting that whatsoever. But like that weird, like, you know, cult around it was just the only frustrating part.
It was like if Kelsey Grammer was like, I don't want to do Frasier anymore, and they continued Frasier.
Yeah,
it was essentially like a non-titular character of The Office left, but they had a bunch of strong characters. It still was, it was missing something. It was missing the key ingredient.
Mm-hmm. I've already finished Avatar. But I'm going back around for one more trip because I'm trying to capture stuff for memes. I'm making a little meme folder out of the stuff I find. That's just called being a good employee right there.
From Avatar?
Yeah, because there's a lot of good
memeable show. Memeable show?
Big time. I'm just capturing as much content as I can.
I haven't seen many Avatar memes. Maybe it's because they just haven't been out there.
Standing Appa, I think, is the one. The one of Standing Appa where it looks like Mom, It's My Turn to Play the Xbox almost. That's the one, Chief.
I started watching Love Life on HBO Max. Love Life, Anna Kendrick show. I started watching a little bit of it. It's fine. I you know, there's this weird, I don't know, like maybe because I don't live in New York City, but like all these shows about dating in New York City present dating is this like weird, like, I don't know. It's just like, I don't know how to describe it. It starts off with this like fantastical narration about like her life and how she grew up and how that led into like her expectations of her love life and, you know, how she meets people she dates, which is like presented in a very, you know, grandiose way, which I guess is interesting. But at the same time, you know, also like she's just dating people. Like, I don't know. Maybe I need to watch more.
Or it's not good. I don't know. That could be the other thing too.
You just talked me out of it. I've never seen an episode.
Yeah, that was.
I might not be the show for me. I might not just be the Love Life audience. The Rick and Morty finale, I thought, was incredible. I know you guys aren't huge R&M fans.
No, I am a fan. I have unfortunately just not gone through the whole thing because I do love that show.
I haven't started it yet. I'll get there eventually.
Back half of the last season is pretty solid. I mean, I still think it's a fine show, but there's one thing I appreciate about Rick and Morty is Dan Harmon and Justin Roiland. They have a large contempt for the people in the fan base who would have been at the McDonald's screaming "Wubba Lubba Dub Dub" playing their Szechuan sauce. They hate that part of the fan base. And so I think a lot of what they've been trying to do is like in the last two seasons is make a show that subverts a lot of those expectations, but also just makes those people feel like idiots. And I think they got lost in the sauce a little bit on that. It wasn't as funny. It was like
Miss Chester one sauce.
Yep. But what they did was they had some episodes this season where they kind of like, you know, ripped on some like plot lines that people wanted to see and ripped on the continuity that, you know, people love. And then with the finale, they found a good balance because they gave us a little bit of that. Cause I do think there's some like very enjoyable continuity in the Rick and Morty universe.
I got enough. King of Staten Island's out next week, though. We do have an interview with Judd Apatow. We were supposed to have an interview this week that did get delayed till next week. And that's kind of our big secret one, though. Some people have figured it out. So we're excited to get to that. Otherwise,
I like the advertisements I'm seeing for King of Staten Island because it has the wallflowers in it. A band I feel like had one of the best three song runs on an album ever with, I think it was One Headlight, The Difference, and Sixth Avenue Heartbreak, and maybe three Marlenas. Maybe it's four songs.
I've only been hearing Pursuit of Happiness on the commercials I've seen for King of Staten Island.
Yeah, that might be the New York, maybe because we're in the tri-state area. We have different commercials. I don't know.
No, they've been.
Well, so is Trill. To be fair,
It's been like the One Headlight, the breakdown when they're singing in the firehouse.
Okay.
Right. Oh, right. Great scene, by the way.
Great scene.
Great scene in the movie. Right. That's an awesome movie. Can't wait to talk about it. I do want to do a shout out quick because the person said they'll leak the documents if we shout them out. At Brent, BRENDT _Pates. He has some sort of Outback Steakhouse recipe book.
I know. I forget what I responded to him. I think I called it the Holy Bible.
Well, this is like the Bible of Outback recipes. Trill, I mean, look at this. This is the Alice Springs chicken, like the actual
like a diagram. Documents. It looks like an IKEA put together diagram, basically. It's like, here's where you put everything.
You're flying too close to the sun, Icarus.
He said he'll release it to us if we give him a shout-out. There's your shout-out. I'm in the suburbs this week. I left New York for the first time to go visit family. Left New York the first time since early March or late February, and I've had an Outback Steakhouse gift card sitting in my email for 3 months now, and I finally get to use it this weekend. I cannot wait. Just going to smash that Victoria's Filet.
Oh, you know how good breaking open a wedge right down the middle with a steak knife? It sounds cut that, just split it.
Imagine your talent.
So much the aioli for the blooming onion.
Oh,
I don't know what it is.
But imagine being the guy who does the iceberg lettuce cut in half in commercials, the slow-mo ones against the wood block.
I don't trust any of those anymore ever since seeing like the behind the scenes of how they do that shit in the commercial, like potatoes are actually ice cream and all that shit. That bothers the shit out of me. I wish I never watched those.
My favorite commercial trope for food is the little lettuce bounce.
Oh, that's what I mean. Yeah, the lettuce. Yeah.
When they'll dump some lettuce off of like a glossy black surface.
Oh, that. Sopping, yes.
And like the
sopping
water,
wet.
Yeah, the water beads will come off, and it's be like, here at Sex Burger, we have the juiciest heads of lettuce.
Got the wettest so squirting lettuce. Wet.
Lettuce just squirting everywhere. And our tomatoes have so many seeds, the bust.
Exactly. Meanwhile, you go and get it, and it's just like the saddest tomato you ever seen in your life. It's like dying, like it's been dead for a long time.
Nothing sadder than a chain tomato, a chain restaurant tomato that's just not a great tomato.
It's like that tomatoes at Subway. The Subway tomatoes are so sad. I've never had a good Subway tomato.
You know that like kinetic sand that you can put it together and it looks like a really nice sculpture, and then you touch it and it just disperses and falls apart. That's tomatoes at Subway. You bite into the tomato at Subway and it just turns into dust.
Exactly. It's so I hate just looking at it. It's like always, it's never red. It's never a red tomato. It's like a pinkish hue to it. It looks like it just doesn't look right ever.
I don't know. I don't get the tomato at Subway when I go. Maybe it's part of the reason. It's because you just never get good consistency out of the tomato.
It's a horrid tomato.
I've moved away from tomatoes on stuff in recent years.
Why is that?
Because most of the time I feel like tomatoes, unless they're fresh and crunchy, they just destroy the consistency of whatever you're trying to eat.
That's true.
Just add to the mush.
Yeah, especially the inner part of it. I think you need like a good thin slice.
You do need a good thin slice. I agree. I do agree with that. All right, that's it for news. Today, support for the podcast comes from Manscaped, folks. Manscaped has the right tools to get the job done quickly, safely, hygienically. Doesn't nick your old balls, your sack. Father's Day is just around the corner. You probably need a gift for your hairy dad. Forgot that was in there. Make your dad proud this year and get him and yourself the Manscaped Perfect Package. You know what they say, folks, like father, like son, right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Perfect Package 3.0 by Manscaped is the number one recommended gift all year long. The Perfect Package 3.0 kit also comes with the Essential Lawnmower 3.0 water-resistant cordless body trimmer and then a bunch of other liquid formulations to round out your manscaping routine. Third generation of the trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to prevent manscaping accidents on any part of your body, chest, back, anywhere. 7,000 RPM trimmer to help prevent manscaping accidents.
That's the red line on a Honda Civic Type R. I mean, thinking about just relative to the power you get out of that, the RPMs, exactly. They're comparable.
Yeah.
Well, the one thing you really want is a smooth dad. Don't forget.
You know, in Australia, they call it the mate trimmer.
Fuck you.
That's just, I don't like that. I didn't like that joke. for a limited time, subscribers get a free gift, the Shed Travel Bag, too, which is really nice. I used this weekend. Get 20% off plus free shipping with code LIGHTS at manscaped.com. Do yourself a favor and always use the best tools for the job. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code LIGHTS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. Get that body smooth, folks. Movie theaters. Cinemark setting a date on when they're going to open, which is it's not insanely surprising. June 19th seems to be the date. New York City is projected in the next two or so weeks to finally start very, very slowly reopening. They will not require masks. Meanwhile, AMC says they're doubtful they can stay in business after shutdowns. That was a tough headline to read. That's just, I mean, I assume a movie theater will go into wherever my AMC currently is if it shuts down, which is like the number one highest grossing movie theater in the country, the one that we go to. That's kind of a dagger to see. That's a little upsetting, to be completely honest. So I don't know what's going to happen with AMC, but theaters open. Where do we stand right now, guys? We're recording this June 3rd. If you were given the chance to go to a movie on June 19th, would you go?
I think I'd be ready on July 1st.
Okay.
Give me 2 weeks after that June 19th to see. See what like everything's doing. I mean it's also one of those things where I don't look, the communication has not been very clear on the efficacy of masks. I think
that is a huge and important point. that people just let fly under the radar, the point that like the sort of the actual efficiency of the mess, right? That is on totally under the radar. People are like, everyone wears masks, and like, there, I don't think there's been really consensus on if they're actually as helpful as people think they are. Like, they're definitely better than not wearing masks, but I don't think that they're going to like make you fucking immune to everything around you.
Well, I think most of it comes from like back in March, where they're just that, you know, that press conference where it was just like a mask aren't going to do anything or whatever. And then a month later, it's like, oh, you should start wearing masks. And I'm like, I agree. I'll wear a mask. You know what? If it doesn't do anything, at least it makes me feel better. But I still don't know, like, you know, what they say from the science is that the places you're most likely to get it are enclosed areas with poor circulation. And I don't know if a theater counts, but it feels like it would count. And then the other thing I think they're like wanting to do is saying like, well, you know, we don't want to make people wear masks. Is that if you wear a mask, look, you're less likely to buy food at the theater. I'm gonna put my mask on, right? And then I'm not going to take it off because we're like told not to touch our face or touch our masks. So now you got people who are just like, well, I'll put my mask on before I go in, and I'm not going to fuck with it the entire time. But that means I'm not going to buy food. And that's where the theater makes its money. So I don't know. Look, I'm not debating the science behind masks. I think they're more effective. It seems like something that would be more effective to me, but I'm just saying like, you still need to take precautions. It doesn't make you invincible. And even sitting in a theater with a mask where I don't know if that air is being recirculated, just be safe, smart about it.
certain types of masks are definitely better than the other. I think most people you see in the street aren't wearing like the N95 ones or whatever, which like rightfully so, those ones should be going to people on like the front lines and everything like that. But like if I'm sitting in a theater and I'm wearing just like a regular like mask that like, you know, everyone else has, the ones that you can actually get your hands on, I'd be kind of scared, I think, right now, especially because, you know, if you're wearing an N95 and everyone else around you isn't, or not wearing a mask like in Cinemark or whatever, or if they're just wearing ones that have poor or like allow contagion to get out, I'd be, you know, a little bit bugged out by that. And if you don't see them doing this cleaning and you don't see them like what they're doing in between the showings, that would be, I don't know, it's just a little bit scary to me. And it does suck, especially if Jeff said the AMC part, just because that's our theater. I mean, I never really go to a Cinemark, but I mean, obviously a lot of people use those too. For me, AMC shutting down would be terrible. Hopefully they can get some sort of, maybe not, I don't know, they don't exactly, and not exactly a necessary business that need a bailout, but I would hope that they would be, you know, in the running for something like that.
Well, this worst part about Cinemark, my one issue, Trill, you'll remember this because we went to a Cinemark together to see The Rise of Skywalker, is their fucking mascot, the Scat Cat, that guy.
Oh, was he a, yeah, he was a, some sort of cat or a fox or something. He was some furry.
He was a cat or a fox in a tuxedo.
Yeah, paying him way too much. I'm thinking, you know, we're talking about AMC having to restructure potentially. If Cinemark has to restructure, I'd trim the fat, cut that contract on that Scat Cat Cinemark. Like, you don't need a mascot for a movie theater. Also, really, somebody could give him work.
That's true. That's true. Basically, what the options were, you could buy a Rey Funko Pop, you could buy Frozen merchandise, or the Cinemark mascot on a blanket.
How many of those do you think they sell a year? How many units of those do you think they move?
Some guy's like, this would be a good plow blanket.
That's a cleanup blanket. You just want that fox right on your dick after you're done.
All right, let's
set the climax.
By the way, we're moving on. That was a very seamless transition, folks. You have no idea, but halfway through or at the beginning of the Scat Cat comment, I lost my internet. So this is a completely separate recording. We're going to move right along here because
it's been like a 2 hour break. It's okay.
No, I feel like 1 hour.
I like to let the hyperbole.
But you guys both went down at the same time. I thought the Northeast got hit with an EMP.
Well, yeah, because my cell service went out, so I couldn't even just be like, ah, fuck, guys, I lost Wi-Fi. Like, I had nothing.
You went out, and then Kinjek went out maybe 30 seconds later.
Mine died yours.
Oh, man. I'm like, is this shockwave coming my way? Like,
so it looked like I definitely said, the second I came back to Trill, I was just like, damn, you probably thought there was a nuclear attack or something, didn't you? And he was like, yep, that's literally exactly what I thought.
We're going to talk Lovecraft County and then Hocus Pocus. So why don't we start with Lovecraft County from Jordan Peele and J.J. Abrams. Lovecraft County follows Atticus Black as he joins up with his friend Letitia and his uncle George to embark on a road trip across 1950s Jim Crow America in search of his missing father. This begins a struggle to survive and overcome both the become the racist terrors of white America. It's late. I can't read now. And the terrifying monsters that could be ripped from a Lovecraft paperback. Boy, whew, this will be a tough next hour and 20. Coming to HBO and HBO Max in August 2020. Another teaser. There'd been one before this. What do you think about old Lovecraft County from Jordan Peele and J.J. Abrams? I'm intrigued. This goes to what we've said, Trill, right? If HBO puts it out, I'm going to look at it with some legitimacy.
Yeah, I agree. And at least what I know about Lovecraft, and I think a lot of it's from the last podcast on the left and maybe some other podcasts, he was a big old racist. And that a lot of his horrors are kind of rooted in some sort of racial fears held, and so I think that this is pretty ripe for being a prescient show, and I'm excited.
Turning it around and turning it into something else, which I think a good way to do that, not to use necessarily just as original source material, but just kind of branching off and doing something different with it. And I love J.J. Abrams. I think he's smart, and I think he does really well with horror. He did more recently, Overlord, right? And I loved Overlord.
Well,
he made a big part of that.
JJ is like he's like a quarterback you want in the game for the first half, and then you need maybe for the third quarter, and then you need a fourth quarter quarterback to come in.
I mean, I think baseball would have been a better analogy for this if you just wanted a closer.
Yeah. JJ's like
the classic three-quarter quarterback if you're playing maneuver.
No, listen to me. I got the perfect one. If you're playing a golf scramble, JJ hits the drive, and then he hits the approach shot, you get another person to come in to putt. Does that one work too?
I mean, so just a one, two-thirds now instead?
No, I think the pitching one's the best. I think the pitching, yeah. I think we got to go with that.
Scramble is a super convoluted way of describing that. I mean, it makes a little, you know, you bring in the one guy in a scramble who can't do anything but putt.
Okay. How about this?
Which is, by the way,
if you're playing bocce ball. All right. You're trying to get that ball real close to the other ball.
All right, you're playing basketball. All right. I mean, who do you want to have the final shot? Michael Jackson or Brian Cardinal?
Underrated, most pressure-packed thing in sports is when you're the putting guy in a scramble, because if you fail, you're there. That's a kicker in football, but even more so because it's typically just you and your three buddies, and you've paid a lot of money to be in that scramble, and you can win a lot of money and prizes. And if you just stink at putting and you're the putting guy, you're useless. You'd be hated.
I'm the hybrid iron guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's a popular club. It's not crazy.
No, dude.
We'll golf one day. Okay, let's move on to Hocus Pocus 2. Here are three guys on a podcast who definitely care about this sequel. Hocus Pocus 2, original cast willing to return, says Sarah Jessica Parker. I'm going to keep it real with you here.
Yeah,
I didn't know. I didn't even know this was an option that they weren't going to return.
I thought you have to have them return, right? This is separate. Yeah. We've already talked about them redoing Hocus Pocus, right?
Like, yeah, who cares if they don't? Who is going to watch this if they don't return?
Yeah, it's just a show about witches. Like the central central thing about Hocus Pocus is that you have Bette Midler and Sarah Jessica Parker, and then the other one.
Yeah, and the other lady. And I feel like the one defining characteristic about witches is that they're old. I think that's totally fine, although Sarah Jessica Parker admittedly pretty young and attractive in that one. But at the same time, I feel like they can be old. It's really not a big deal. I don't think they were ever going to recast them. But also, I didn't forget what Bette Midler said. I didn't forget that. I hope you guys did.
I noted on my rundown, I said, ask the fellas if it – okay, I'm paraphrasing. Basically, I need to ask you guys, if I'm remembering correctly – if we're an anti-Bette Midler pod, I think we are.
I'm not anti-Bette Midler. I think one of you guys was anti-Bette Midler.
I think 2-1 vote, this is an anti-Bette Midler pod.
Yeah. Sorry, Troll, got voted.
Bette Midler's fine. The issue I've always had with Hocus Pocus is that you have Bette Midler, Sarah Jessica Parker, and no disrespect to Kathy Najimy, but that's, not in the same star level, right? Even in 1993? That was the question. You guys just don't care?
Midler was definitely the most popular.
Yeah, Midler was the
most popular. That's what I'm saying, but there's a drop-off after Sarah Jessica Parker. I want three very famous witches.
So they just boot off the third member and just replace her?
Man, it's like Destiny's Child for
witches.
Oh,
my God.
You got Kelly Rowland. You got Bette Midler is obviously Beyonce. And Sarah Jessica Parker is Kelly Rowland. And then who gives a fuck?
They're going to end up having Meryl Streep in this at some point. I wouldn't doubt that one bit. And I'm sorry if I spoke that into existence, but Disney, Hocus Pocus, Meryl Streep, it's all going to happen. She's going to be like the Overlord Witch when they're going to be like, we need to ask the all-knowing witch. And then they're going to go to her like Cousin Topsy or whatever it was in Mary Poppins.
Oh, my God. I forgot she was in Mary Poppins.
That dumb joke. Shit.
Kathy Najimy. I think she's great. Because she did the voice of Peggy Hill, which I think Peggy Hill is one of the most brilliant animated characters ever. Her performance was great in that. She was also in Veronica's Closet.
Also in Veep. She's Mike's wife in Veep. Yep,
very, very funny. I always have a hard time remembering who played the third witch in Hocus Pocus. And that seems like a branding issue.
Oh, right. She's also in Rat Race. She's John Lovitz's. She plays the wife of John Lovitz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Imagine being cast as that. Like you're married to John Lovitz, and you're like, oh
shit,
what?
Damn,
shit.
Is that what you think of me?
Come again. All right. This episode brought to you in part by the Barstool Sports Store, store.barstoolsports.com. We will see. We have another fictional basketball debates coming up. We will see if we have merch drop after that. We may not. We may. I don't know. We'll see. Store.barstoolsports.com. Head there now. Get some stuff. Get some loungewear. No one goes in the fucking office anymore. You do Zoom meetings. Come on. Get some loungewear. Be comfortable.
Get some pants with elastic waistband.
Well, I mean, I wear, I won't name the brand right now. Similar to the shoe company, Allbirds, different type of name. I wear their shorts exclusively in the summer and through the early fall, and they're elasticized. That's the one of the greatest clothing inventions ever made.
Do you do the ones with the built-in underwear?
Yes. I don't want to say the name because I want them to sponsor us.
Freak.
They're amazing. They sponsor another popular podcast at our company, hosted by two males.
Oh, that really narrows it down.
Wait, are they white? Sports.
Might be. One has long hair. One has long hair. Other has a feline nickname.
I don't know still.
I would like a pair of those pants. I would cut out the liner because I gotta roll with my jockeys. I got my jockeys.
Right, there you go. Okay, that was the whitest thing ever said. Gotta roll with my jockeys.
Okay, so I got Lululemon underwear. Try it.
Who can afford you?
I got
pair.
It as a gift.
You got one pair.
I got one pair of really nice underwear.
So now you have to ration your underwear. That's always going to be the special underwear. You're not going to want to wear it because you want to keep it clean for a special occasion.
But here's what I do. I have that pair and I have three pairs of MeUndies. And those are like my pair. And after those 4 days are up, I do like one laundry day pair and I do laundry because I only really want to wear those boxers and briefs. They're so comfortable.
I respect that. I have 20 pairs of the same jockey underwear that bought at Target.
No Lucky. Was it Lucky Brand where they charge like $50 for one pair of briefs?
I have no problem with the expensive briefs because I think you get what you pay for. And I know they sponsor us sometimes. I don't get around to buying new underwear very often. I just got around to buying new socks. I bought some of the expensive socks with the logo of a bee. I don't know if they'll ever sponsor us, but they're worth it.
They did at one point.
Did they?
Pretty sure.
Fuck. Mm-hmm. I've missed out on that.
So. I don't think so.
I wanted the suitcase company to sponsor us at some point. Needed that suitcase. Never happened for us.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's been inside podcasting.
I know you're talking about there. I actually just bought a Shark Tank product called Just the Cheese.
I kind of know what it is, but
it's like a cheese stick, like a I don't know. It's kind of cool.
What do you mean? It's just like a string cheese? Did you buy string cheese?
I think it's here. I think I can do a live test.
Just the cheese. It's a cheese stick? Like, can you describe? Are you fucking with us right now? Because it sounds like you bought designer string cheese. Hang on.
We're going to try it right now.
Just the tip.
All right. It's not here yet. Here's the conceit of the product. You know, people like the burnt, like crispy cheese in like on a pan.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
The company's based around that, and it's really low carb, low cal, and it's just it's that type of thing.
Parmesan crisps.
It's like a parm crisp. Yeah. But he's from Wisconsin.
Say it's a Parmesan crisp.
Yeah, but it's not really just a cheddar crisp.
It's a cheddar.
But it's like it's sold like a bar. It's pretty cool.
Okay.
I don't know.
Crispin Glover should open a factory in England. Imagine how much money he'd make if it.
Sure, he has brand. The money from that lawsuit that he won.
Exactly.
Didn't we just make a joke about Crispix Glover on the serial episodes?
you can't get rid of this guy.
If not, you Mandela affected Ooh. That.
He has a combination restaurant. He loves sales and also crisps. You can buy both in the same place.
Smart. Fuck off. Just
or glove-shaped crisps.
God. All right, couple quick news hits here. Not to stay on them long. Godzilla vs. Kong officially rated PG-13 for creature Boo. Violence.
Boo.
Creature violence.
Boo. Boo.
It sounds like a line from Rocky Horror Picture Show. It's like, creature violence, Rocky Horror. No? Okay.
No, that definitely wasn't a song from that. You're
often very good at singing on this show. If you don't make it past one line of lyric, I just can't. The bar's too high for you at this point. You resorted to the show's name for the second line of lyrics.
Bar's too high.
WandaVision apparently casting. WandaVision casting Evan Peters, apparently. That's weird because he played the other Quicksilver. Do you think there's a chance? And they've already said he's not playing Quicksilver. I don't believe anything until I see it.
Maybe it's alternate universe Quicksilver.
Right. Yeah. Do you think maybe it is? That would be pretty cool.
How they explain the whole property rights thing. They just say the X-Men was in a different dimension, and then they just sucked him in.
I mean, yeah, that'd be cool, I guess. I don't know. I don't care that much. I do know Evan Peters has a large fan base online. I remember that. Like, all those American Horror Story people have, like, a hive. Big following.
His slowdown sequences as Quicksilver in the X-Men movies are some of the coolest things that they did, I thought.
Oh, yeah.
Was like First Class and the other one.
Dude, injuring him early in Dark Phoenix was just that was going to stink. That was just like, yeah, you knew it was going to stink after that. You're like, this isn't any good.
What was the movie we just reviewed where somebody pauses time and alters the bar fight? Or did I watch that on my own?
Well, I think you watched that on your own.
Pauses time and alters
Sonic.
The bar fight?
It was Sonic.
Oh, you rewatched it recently? Or are you just calling it back to?
No, it was just calling back. I mean, it feels like 8 years ago, but it really was like February. And remember, he didn't really pause time, but he was so fast that he was able to. I'm always a sucker for those types of scenes.
Yeah, that's what Quicksilver does too. And then I think he did it in Apocalypse and First Class. No, it wasn't First Class. It was whatever was after First Class.
I feel like if you got Quicksilver in it, you got to do it. You can't not do it if he's going to be in there. Which they better do it in WandaVision.
I can't see any other reason why he would be in a show with WandaVision or Wanda, rather. That is,
it would be bizarre, right?
Mm-hmm. I think, but that would be also a really good way to play with the weird concept of WandaVision. That would be
right?
Just like it's weird. Isn't WandaVision supposed to be like a little more far out, like exploring like different realms, maybe, or other things? I can't really describe it, but you know, the name of the show is WandaVision, so you think they're gonna get a little freaky with it.
Yeah, I mean, they should.
Yeah, I agree. Last thing, Vision, Space Vision, Force starting Vision. Season 2. Oh, go ahead, do the joke.
Just holding his t-shirt up with his chin so it doesn't get wet.
that was actually mildly worth it. Space Force, so
they're gonna get freaky with it.
Go float over a towel.
Space Force Season 2 already in the works, despite Netflix has not renewed it yet.
I mean, but that's fine. Look,
Red Rocket.
I haven't watched it yet.
I do need one of you to watch this thing.
I'm going to watch it.
I haven't because you said it was bad. A couple other people I trust say it bad, but at the same time, everyone else, I do see dissenting opinions that are like, I think it was fine. So I don't know.
I think it's like fine, but like the level of fine where if it was just a touch worse, I would say it's terrible.
Mm.
If that makes sense. Like it's whatever. Like I watched it and I wasn't like, this is a struggle, but there were moments where I was like, not enjoying this. So it's close to being terrible, but it's just enough to be fine.
That's an endorsement. I mean, give me a second season of that shit, baby.
I would not like if someone said firm watch or don't watch, I would say don't watch.
They could retool it though.
There's a
fucking
lot there.
Parks and Rec had a shitty first season. Yeah. The Office first season, I didn't even particularly enjoy a crazy amount. Like, it could easily rebound and have a fucking awesome
It's a tonal disaster. It's just,
can reset and use whatever was great from that first season and, like, kind of take that criticism in stride and use it to make a better second season. You never know.
Well, they did do a lot of changes, I think, with the Michael Scott character between season 1 and 2. And then Parks and Rec was a different show entirely.
A disaster.
But, like, Leslie Knope was Michael Scott the first season. They gave her own character, and then they wrote off the Mark guy.
Oh, he sucked.
Yeah.
He was so bad.
Why did we do this for?
Leslie. Who knows?
So Netflix probably just looking at it, and they're like, well, we got, you know, sunk cost fallacy maybe, but we already, like, spent a lot of money making this, and people are watching it. It's got Steve Carell in it, so let's do it again. But I do think it could get better. I also haven't seen it.
Yeah.
But I'm not expecting to like super enjoy it just based on the fact that I haven't heard a single person say it's great.
Yeah, again, Yeah.
The best endorsement I've heard of it is like, it's better than people say it is. And that to me isn't a ringing endorsement to see it, you know?
Space Force.
Thank you.
Folks, have you heard about this Space Force?
He did it. He did it, folks.
Anybody got any gum? Anybody got any gum?
You want to talk about the Nice Guys?
Let's do it. Yeah.
The Nice Guys came out in 2016. Holland March, played by Ryan Gosling. I'm sorry. It's Gosling and Crowe the entire time I talk about this movie. Is a down-on-his-luck private eye in 1977 Los Angeles. Jackson Healy, played by Russell Crowe, is a hired enforcer who hurts people for a living. Fate turns them into unlikely partners after a young woman named Amelia, played by Margaret Qualley, mysteriously disappears. Healy and March, Gosling and Crowe soon learn the hard way that some dangerous people are also looking for Amelia. Their investigation takes them to dark places as anyone else who gets involved in the case seems to wind up dead. This movie, it was received with praise by critics and was pretty well received by audiences, but kind of just didn't get a ton of love. Like it wasn't
commercially popular.
Right. Shane Black directed it. Obviously very famous director, done some insane movies, has done some stinkers too. Don't get me wrong. The Predator. He did Iron Man 3. Not great, but he's been a part, especially as a writer, of a lot of really good movies. But this one is not just his best, but I think this is one of the best movies probably last five or so years. I gave it in the low 90s when I first saw it. Watched it again, loved it more. Watched it again, loved it even more. Where it is right now, it's a 95 out of 100 for me. This movie is absolutely fantastic. Well written, looks great, music sounds great, and it's some of the best chemistry between two actors in any movie I've ever seen. I'm sorry if that's hyperbolic. They are so good off each other, and they were not just good there. They were amazing in the press tour. They were amazing at the Oscars. The two of them presented at the Oscars together, and like Ryan Gosling made a joke like, "Between us, we have two Oscars," and he's like, "You have an Oscar, mate." And they went back and forth, and it was like the best part of that whole show. They were so good off screen. And it just bled. It bled from what you saw in the movie because they were like – it was like they were brothers and that they've worked together in every movie for their whole lives. And that is what makes the movie because they are just – they're fucking charming together. And this movie needs a sequel. And I feel like that's very rare to hear from this podcast, but this movie needs a sequel. These guys can go at it again and go after criminals again. It can be simple. It can be fun. I love The Nice Guys. It's a must watch. Big time must watch label. Great movie.
Yeah, it's a 90 for me. It has some scenes I think that really, even the opening scene. I remember when I first watched it, like it's ridiculous, and I didn't know what was actually happening. I didn't know if it was a dream scene or whatever because this kid's looking at like a porno rag of Misty Mountains, and then like through the kitchen window or whatever, you see the car kind of careening and it rolls through the house, and then she's naked and dying, and that's it. So I didn't know what was happening, but I think that kind of like the you know, it's a noir type dark comedy absurdist type of movie, and that I think that kicks it off really well and sets the tone for the entire thing.
Yeah, so I gave it a 94 out of 100. And I think what I love about it so much is that even though it's a sort of complicated plot line, it still feels very effortless. And with like almost any other movie, I would say there's too much going on, right? Because there's the private detectives with their own emotional family arcs. There's environmentalists. There's the porn industry. There's the car industry. It goes on and on and on. But I think they made it, Shane Black that has made it work because every single separate part is shortened and simplified enough to remain a coherent whole. And from a humor standpoint, because obviously this is a comedy at its base, again, everything feels effortless. And that's just like the key word for me. Because for me, in 2016, especially when I hear the name Russell Crowe, I think dramatic, serious roles and like his off-camera shit, whatever. And with Ryan Gosling, I think dramatic roles. I think People's Sexiest Man's bullshit, whatever. But both of them are so effortlessly funny together on screen. Like you said, Jeff, their chemistry is just insane. And I also really liked, I believe it's pronounced Angry Rice, the child from it. And because, you know, kids can sometimes make or break a comedy, but I think Shane Black kind of like played to her strength and used her as almost a straight man to counter like these like goofy two dudes. And it worked perfectly. And the movie and the whole kind of reminds me of, I think, the other guys, except it's a little less goofy and a little more focused on telling like an actual story sort of at its base. Right. And for me, it's one of the funniest movies of the past decade easily. And not even just a must-watch comedy, but like a must-watch movie.
Well, yeah. I mean, the kid, I think the kid was the best part of the movie because both of the Crow and Gosling characters are losers. They're losers in their own right and for different reasons, but they're lovable losers, you know, down on their luck or either like, you know, Crow's character, I don't think has much aspirations out of life other than just, you know, being what am I looking for? Like just some strength, some biceps, some like big guy, you know,
yeah.
Trying to crush some skulls and undercover some mysteries. But Gosling's character also, I think was the right mix between writing for him and the way Gosling is able to act out the lines themselves. Because I went into the quote section and like, you know, like one of them, like I'm reading right now is like, oh, I write, which one of you cock and balls wants to make $20, which like reading it out right now, like doesn't sound that funny. But when Gosling says it in this movie, it's very funny. And everything he says is very funny. And he does physical comedy, like when he cuts his hand open, I think pretty well, like that's funny. And so everything just clicks. And I did think the storyline was convoluted, but I quite enjoyed that because it almost just made you feel like, you know, you were in over your head, just like these guys may have been. I don't really think they're in over their head, but like, look, they're the nice guys. They're the lovable losers, and so they're never supposed to really uncover this. And you know, intertwining the automobile industry with the porn industry is like absurd, and I enjoy that.
The hand cut on the door is one of the hardest I've left in a theater because I did not expect it one even little bit. It was such a quick and easy moment because it was so serious going into it, and you just, that's not a moment when you're watching a movie where you're like, okay, let's, like something's gonna happen right here when he hits this door. You're like, no, it's just a setup for him to walk in. Like, it just was so fucking quick and funny, man. That shit was gold.
Let me interject, because you talk about the plot and things that happen a little bit. Let me interject some of the questions that we've gotten on this movie. Quiet Warlock 22 says, I love this movie, but do you think the plot could have been a little easier to follow? Do you have any issues with the plot and how it was constructed?
I think a lot of it was John Boy and Blueface. I don't know. I mean, there's just a lot happening with those two characters in terms of the chase and the pursuit, I thought. And then who's the other guy? The old man? You know, there are a lot of like, this is kind of like cat and mouse, you know, detective type moving pieces to it, which.
There's a lot of names in this movie. And again, that's, I think, maybe one of the parts I kind of like about this is that it, the convoluted part aspect of the movie that you're talking about, I think only works because they shortened that like a little bit. There's a lot of movies where like they kind of try and do the same thing, like tell a bunch of just sort of little subplots or have a bunch of different aspects weave into one cohesive plot, and it doesn't work. Like they go too far and too deep into all these different areas. I think they kept everything as tight as possible on all these subplots and all these minor characters and everything to where that whole part that all these parts are going into remained cohesive.
Yeah. And I was going to say Kim Basinger's character and like, you know, also like Margaret Qualley and the Amelia character, you know, like they, you know, there was a lot of characters in this movie, a lot of things happening. I think they could have cleaned it up a little bit, but at the same time, I do think the lot going on added to just the absurd nature of the movie. The chaotic energy of the movie, if you will, to use something that's being overused these days, or chaotic energy is a term for like saying, well, I love the chaotic energy at McDonald's today when there's like extra fries on your plate and someone posts that to Instagram. It's like, that's not chaotic energy.
Anyway, I haven't seen that happen, but I do want someone to do that now. On my timeline.
Oh, it's just overused. It's anyway.
That and people. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like a big, big chaotic energy here. And it's like just very normal stuff. Anyway, that's my little rant. I think that, look, I don't think this was ever supposed to be a commercial success. $50 million they spent on the movie and they made $63 million. But I've never heard anyone say a negative thing about it on the whole. Like, you know, there are complaints about the plots. But this is maybe one of the movies that whenever I've heard anyone talk about it, it's like near universal in terms of like general positivity on the sentiment. And, you know, I'm getting away from the question, but I do think it's amazing that it's like, you know, for something like Bridesmaids, right? I think it's great. And a lot of people think it's shit. There's like a lot of stuff that people think it's exceptional that other people think is mediocre. With The Nice Guys, it's like, it is what it's meant to be. But everyone I've like talked to about it or heard say, it's like, it's awesome. It's great. It's very funny.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I think you in going off the point kind of brought it back together there. Another question I want to bring up is kind of just about Gosling in general and Crow, lesser to extent with Crow, because Crow's obviously has an Oscar. And Crow's history is a little different than Ryan Gosling's in terms of success in movies and shit. But do you consider this Ryan Gosling's best role? And I mean, I can put the same up there for Russell Crowe, though I imagine no one will say yes on that.
I guess it depends on how you want to quantify best. Like it's my favorite comedic role of his. If you can put it.
But you could, and would narrow. You also say too that like, I mean, he was very stoic in Blade Runner 2049. I thought he was great in First Man. But this is the type of role that this is his role. And like, that's La La Land, right? Like La La Land was the same thing. He was maybe not like this. He was a different character. But those were, you know, those were different than his Crazy Stupid Love role, right? In terms of like who he was. This is the type of role that when he's doing this, his comedic timing is, okay, his role in The Big Short might be my favorite role of his, actually. He is so fucking good at that movie. He nails everything. But again, that's comedic. Now, it's a different comedic because this, in the Nice Guys, he's a wimp, basically. In The Big Short, he's not at all. But like when he's in a role, when it comes to comedic timing, Gosling is kind of as good as anyone. Like he is always on point.
I think if you're going to boil it down to like what his hardest acting role was, I do think like Blade Runner of 2049, and we've talked about this before, like robotic acting is not as easy as it looks. And I think that role also combined robotic acting with like real life emotional acting. And he managed to kind of get both of that. I think that was his most difficult performance. So I'd have to say if I had to pick one, that was his best. But if I wanted to say my favorite, I might pick this role just because for a lot of the reasons, like you said, Jeff, like he's like kind of into, I think he really works in this role. Like this is the type of role he's born to play for me.
I think I'll always love him in Lars and the Real Girl just because shit could have hit the fan so hard in that movie and it just could have not worked. But one that was like my major introduction to Ryan Gosling outside of The Notebook. Remember The Titans too, but you know, that wasn't like his movie. But I think the thing about Gosling, I think that like he brings to the comedic roles is, sometimes when somebody really attractive is doing comedy, it's just really funny. It's like the John Hamm principle. There's something that level of charm like brings to the comedy that kind of elevates it into like just him like looking the part and trying to be suave, but also being like kind of a fuck up in this movie in the same way that like John Hamm was like a jackass in Bridesmaids, but like, or the same way he's a total fucking creeping Kimmy Schmidt, but then also have them like look that, you know, insanely Hollywoodish. So I don't know if like that was like I don't know if that was a
John
conscious
Hamm's a really
decision.
Good example of that.
Yeah, but I don't, you know, it's not a conscious decision that they like woke up and they're like, man, I'm going to be attractive and therefore funny. But I do think there's something to be said for like casting attractive people in comedic roles because, look, I typically don't expect attractive people to be funny all the time. It's just like, it's someone who's like had to be funny and is not particularly attractive. It's like part of it's just like, hey, like let me have the funny and you guys can go fucking be hot somewhere. And so when someone is like attractive and funny, I find it enjoyable. I'm not saying like attractive, like physically good, but there's a charm that comes with like someone like Gosling doing comedy. There's a charm that comes with someone like Ham doing comedy. There's a charm that comes with someone like Jamie Foxx doing comedy that it makes it like easy breezy just based off of their charisma. And I think that really comes through in this movie, even though he's playing like a character that's not particularly like up on life. He still delivers things in a way that like are very snarky, but still feel very natural. Whereas like if it was another actor, it may be just like you're trying too hard.
Yeah, that is really well put. The John Hamm one, do we not put enough credit to John Hamm's comedic acting? Not to get off topic.
On this podcast, we accredit him a lot.
That's true. That's true. Because he's also great.
The world does not accredit him.
He's a better comedic actor than he is a dramatic actor, but he also did a really good job as Don Draper and is just very tied to that role in a lot of people's minds that I think, you know, he can go between them. But I don't know John Hamm. I never met him. I probably never will. But sometimes you can like watch a performance or you can watch people like acting or doing comedy roles and you feel like they're enjoying it. And it feels like John Hamm enjoys it when he does it. And part of that's acting too. But like, it's usually when someone's like really good at that, then like part of me is like, well, if like John Hamm wants to keep coming back to this Kimmy Schmidt show to play this like absolutely like lunatic type character, there must be some fun he's having.
Exactly.
Versus like playing something in like where he went to India.
Another fucking FBI agent or whatever. Yeah.
Or I'm going to go to India in a Disney movie and find a baseball player.
Yep.
Do the thing.
The prospect or something like that.
Yeah, I think you're right. There's the prospect.
Oh,
it's like, should we draft this player? No. Have him throw a curveball. See, he just falls down in the batter's box.
That's not good.
How did he get to AAA ball and not face a single curveball?
Lost the curveball.
Statistics, a million monkeys on a million typewriters. They're going to produce Shakespeare someday. He's just never been thrown a curveball.
Trouble with the curve. It was the prospect. Not the prospect. Wait. Nah, we're talking about too much John Hamm now. I'll throw a John Hamm thing soon. We already did that with The Town, technically. Mm-hmm. Someone else mentioned, I can't be the only one who like, confuses the movie with the other guys now and then, even though they like both movies. I do. It is funny because I think I actually called the nice guys the other guys a lot.
I wrote down my rundown for this review, and I literally wrote down the other guys. I wrote down the other guys and then Googled the other guys to see, like, make sure I was getting the actress's name right. And I fucking wrote the other guys instead of the nice guys.
Well, because the name other guys somewhat, I mean, like, if it applies to this movie too, when you think about these characters who kind of swim in the underbelly of society with their PI work, the other guys kind of make sense as like, I don't know. That would work as a title for this one too. But yeah, I do it all the time. I tend to never call the other guys the nice guys, though. The thing, I think the weirdest thing about the plot of this movie for me, though, is why would you make a combination porn/expose?
My answer,
like, I guess you wouldn't. Like, that's the absurd part, right?
No, that's the absurdity, and that's why it's so right. Because I do think we've been talking a lot about absurdities in movies recently, right? With the wrong Missy, Tropic Thunder, but I think that's what kind of makes.
That's what makes
Gosling's character work so well, right? Like there are enough absurdities there where it balances it out perfectly.
Well, and I also think it's also like a loving parody of the 70s to some extent. Now, when you think of the 70s, like, you know, a lot of things come to mind, but for me, some of the things, like if you got me a list of like 100 things, like I think like the porn and just the, you know, like the Debbie Does Dallas, like overly, you know, stylized big hair in a lot of different places of that era, porn would come to mind. And I also think the cars would come to mind. The 70s cars, the start of the 70s, exceptionally shitty automobiles in my mind. I liked it because they kind of combined it together. But like at the same time, you're like watching, it's like, okay, I can suspend my disbelief for that one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Last thing here. If you could cross this movie over with another cop detective movie, what would it be? If you could put these two, make it like a team of four. A couple come to mind, 21 Jump Street, obviously the other guys that might be kind of funny.
Turner and Hooch.
Imagine they say like, "Yeah, we're finally doing it. You're getting the night." What if they said that? They said the Nice Guys sequel is here. It's the Nice Guys meets Turner and Hooch. Would you still be excited?
They're making a new Turner and Hooch. Don't forget the show.
Yeah, there's still hope.
Don't forget Ken Jack roasted it, and then Lisa Lampanelli posted a story on her Instagram.
Yeah, it was the weirdest thing I've ever seen. Because Josh Peck. Yeah, so it's Josh Peck and the Nice Guys. Great. Fucking awesome. What about
and a dead-ass dog.
Yeah, that's right.
Hooch. Rest in peace, Hooch.
Yeah, they used the original
1991.
What about the Rush Hour guys? Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
Rush Hour guys.
Well, here's my question. Do you go comedy? Or do you go serious? Do you cross them with serious people, or do you cross them? Because I still want the Jump Street crossover. Like I would love that, and I actually think Jump Street would be my pick here. But I don't know. Is it too much comedy if you bring in too many funny guys?
No, I would want Chris Maloney. I would want Elliot Stabler and Ice-T's. Forget his name. His character from SVU to meet up with these guys, because that's super serious.
Yeah.
And then Ice-T could do his thing. He's like, you're telling me they made a porno with a car thing?
They call it a catalytic converter. It's when you have sex in the car.
It's somebody and died.
Smoke it out.
Somebody died. I guess you could say they're a satellitic converter. It's like one of those things.
What about Tammy, the Melissa McCarthy movie?
I don't think so.
Maybe
I Spy was good though.
That's true.
I enjoyed Spy, yeah.
You get Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy from The Heat. They were funny.
They wouldn't be bad. Yeah, they wouldn't be bad. Get some good writing. That'd be great. That'd be pretty good.
Still think Chris Tucker and Jackie Chan. I mean, Jackie Chan's like 75 at this point. I mean,
yeah, but being Jackie Chan can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think comedy would work, but I can see like we're like a more serious deadpan, but I feel like you have that with Russell Crowe's character to a most extent, so I'm not sure it's necessary. I would look. This movie needs a sequel. And what do you do with a sequel? Do you keep it? Do you maybe go a little more low key? Because like obviously the thing that they're involved in is pretty massive. There, it's not like it was some small petty crime thing. It was a pretty big operation that they were going after. Like, what do you do with a sequel?
I mean, you could do another. The whole thing is you could just do another thing that just unspools into something bigger as well.
OnlyFans connection to the, what are those scooters called, industry?
The Lime scooters.
Lime,
the
birds. Yeah. There's like 100 of them though.
Are they even business? I can't imagine those have done too well since.
Something tells me COVID did not help that.
No favors. Plan.
It's not great. But I mean, like that's the whole thing with these noir things is they, it always like starts off basically with, you know, some, I mean, at least in like the, not the neo noir ones, but like the classic ones is some attractive woman that a Tex Avery Wolf would be very horny for. I'm gonna make a Tex Avery Wolf joke every
podcast. We talk about fucking Tex Avery Wolf every episode.
I love it. I love the goddamn Tex Avery Wolf because that's amazing. That's all I think about whenever I see like an actress in the 1930s or 40s is just like done up with the curly hair and the Tex Avery Wolf just going, oh.
Tongue rolling out like a fruit roll up.
Well, no, it starts off as like, I want to hire you to do this, and then it unravels into this greater murder mystery plot. And they just do something similar, and I think people would be fine with it. If we bought this plot, which we did, because it's a black comedy, then they could do anything with the second one, as long as you got Crow and Gosling, they're doing their thing, and also the Gosling daughter, which was a very integral part of the movie, because I thought she was so funny when paired off between these two guys, and that's like opposite to what I've been saying about like child actors and kids in movies, where I like some of the more realistic ones where the kids are the dumbass, but I think because this universe is so wacky, it is like I do accept having a smart-ass, very intelligent kid who maybe is I trust more than the adults in this situation than this one.
Fuck, what was the kid? Who's the kid I loved in this movie? Oh, I forget what he said, but you know when they were up on the
burned down house?
The burned down house, yeah. Yeah. That was one of the funniest exchanges. That was one of the funniest. There's a lot of good fucking young actors in this movie. Okay. Yeah, I think that's where we go there. Somebody did mention Another one, Clee Dan said, this seems like the perfect VOD release, which is tough because that's how you kind of know that it wouldn't happen just because of the names. But this movie was not obviously a very big financial success, unfortunately.
It made back its budget. I mean, the thing is, $60 million, I don't even know if that, everything's been skewed so much by our like attention to the Marvel and Star Wars movies that when things don't make $500 million, I'm like, well, damn, dude, what happened?
Shit, man.
What happened? That's, how come?
For comedy, that's pretty for goddamn successful.
I think 60's not bad. I mean, you make back your budget. I don't think these things are intended to go $100 million. It's just issue. The issue is these are always the movies that are going to be cannibalized by the industry consolidations and the reboots and the, you know, sequels and stuff. Like, this is the kind of stuff that, like, I think, you know, when I always complain and bitch about, like, you know, they're not being like fresh original ideas. Like, this is the kind of shit I'm talking about that I want to see that I don't really know until I see it. Like, when you take like two actors who are awesome and put them together, like, it's enjoyable. You put anything on top of that and you got such good chemistry in here. If only we could find out more pairings of actors that are like this level.
You know, it's funny actresses too. You know, how much of that lies on the studios too? Right, how much lies on it to get people into the theaters? Because, you know, I'd imagine that most people that go see this movie are going to like it. Ryan Gosling, it's charming. It's a great chemistry. It's funny. It's a thrilling movie. Like, you know, there's a little bit to that extent. Like, get people into the theaters.
I imagine it was even hard for them to pitch this movie to a studio, though, because they were like, get Ryan Gosling, the Notebook guy, or the guy from Drive, and we're going to pair him up with Russell Crowe in this comedy. And I'm sure that wasn't an easy thing to pitch, especially coming from Shane Black, who I think was, at least at that point in Hollywood, only just starting to make his big sort of comeback, right? Because he had it on all the scripts in the 90s, and then kind of like, I don't think he got blackballed, but he got like disappeared for a while, right?
Yeah, and then so, Iron Man 3 really made, hard. I mean, Iron Man 3 for the at one point was like top 5 movie ever.
And he made Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which obviously was awesome, and they made his comeback.
Yeah. All right, so that's the other guys. 93 out of 100 from the other guys, 93 from the audience. So that puts it top 5 movie we've reviewed. Right below Social Network and Django Unchained, other 93s for throwback reviews. We're going to do Collateral on Sunday. It was a lie. It's not on Amazon Prime. So we're going to have to wait on Collateral. But the second Collateral is on a streaming platform, we will do it. So we'll figure something out. We'll pitch around some ideas and we'll toss up a vote. We'll see what people say. We'll do the same thing again. We'll toss up 3 movies. We'll pick 2 to do on Sunday and Thursday. All right. Before we wrap this up, we have to do one important thing. Top 5 duos. Top 5 duos. But it's actually best duos. Best duos draft. Best duos draft. Who went first last time on the draft?
Trill?
I think I did. I'm going to let the audience get the first pick. Let the audience get the first pick. Then Ken Jack, then myself, then Trill.
Okay. That's right, fair. I'm fine with that.
Okay, audience, the first pick. First pick in best duos, Han and Chewie.
Okay, that's fair.
They were a good duo.
That sounds like 2 people who did not have Han and Chewie in their top 5.
And all my duos get medals. You guys remember when Chewie didn't get the medal in the end of Star Wars?
Ken Jack, second pick. Or second pick of the first round, your first pick.
Hideo Kojima and Mads Mikkelsen might be on Trill's list. I don't know if they made it, but they're an adorable group of two dudes. They just get along. They want to do everything together. They just hang out. I don't even know if they speak a word of each other's languages at all. Mads Mikkelsen is Danish, I think. Hideo Kojima is Japanese. I don't know if they can even speak to each other, but they're best friends. And there's some things cross borders. Some things are bigger than sports, and they just hang out. And I love seeing it. Every picture of them just chilling.
You know what? It wasn't on my list. I don't have a list because I'm just winging it.
Look at this guy. Look at this guy. Well, we'll see if you had this one. My number one. My first pick in the first round. I'm going with burgers and fries.
That's smart. I can't think of a better combination for those two items.
I'm going burgers and fries. I mean, maybe, you know what? I think there's a little bit of bias right now because I'm on Weight Watchers and I'm not eating anything that is actually good. Like I'm now it's like 6 weeks in. So now like I eat these like little styrofoam things with like a small chocolate drizzle, and I think it's like eating a fucking decadent cake. So I'm just accustomed to that. But Outback's gonna be great this weekend. But burgers and fries sound just so good right now. But you know what? Think about, you go to McDonald's, great. Wendy's, great. Whataburger, great. In-N-Out. I mean, no matter where you go, burgers and fries, fast food, it's good. It's a good combo. So that's my first pick. I'm going burgers.
What's the worst thing that can happen with a burger and fry other than being good? You get the kind of fries you don't like, but even then, it's still good.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Have you ever had thin crinkle cut fries? They're the worst. I love crinkle cut fries.
I do
and
too.
I love thin fries. When you combine thin and crinkle cut,
no, it doesn't work.
Are they not crispier? Shouldn't they be crispier? No.
Well, you just, the crinkle cut, the big crinkle cut is the advantage is you get that crinkle accordion surface area to get ketchup into the crevices, but you don't get that with the thin crinkle cuts.
Yeah, true.
Science. That's legitimately science. Troy, you have back-to-back picks here.
I'm going to go with Jordan and Pippen for my first pick. I'm just going to get that out of the way.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I feel like the audience would have had that.
It was on their list.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to take that off their board. My second one is shower in beer.
Oh.
I haven't done that in a while. Damn.
No. Okay.
You know, but yeah, but like, no, I mean, I feel like most people don't do shower beers for a while, but when you do a shower beer, it's special. It's a big game day, you know, or it's a big drinking day. You and your buddies are all getting together, doing a little day drink. Going to play a little bocce ball down at the local Spaghetti's Italian eatery, and you know, that shower beer is like, he's like, I'm committing to this day, and it just hits different. You know, the hot steamy air of the shower against your esophagus getting cooled down by that silver bullet. Nothing better, Tone.
All right. I didn't think shower beers were your second pick. It's a good pick, though.
Yeah.
I'm sticking food again. I think I'm hungry. I think it's what it comes down to. But milk and cookies. A piping cold glass of – can you use piping and cold? Does that work?
No, I don't think. I always piping hot.
Yeah, I don't think that works. Anyway, I'm going to say it. Piping cold. Oh, my God. Let that cookie sit there and just soften up. Get the
– I love it.
Hard,
it makes almost chips. Any it makes get, even the worst cookies taste good.
It does.
You just try to get the cookie to the point where it's soft enough to be as soft as it can possibly be without breaking off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what, even now and then when it breaks off, you're like, ah, whatever, I'll get the spoon.
Yeah, do you guys ever do that? You dip with the spoon? My roommate used to do it. I thought it was weird, but it looks very effective.
I have a friend, Kevin K-Mac. He listens to his podcast. He will yell at me if I don't say his name here. He does. I don't know if he still does. When I lived with him on their couch in Hoboken, he would, for dessert now and then, he'd bring out a couple Oreos, get a big, big spoon, have a glass of milk, and he would just dunk the Oreos down in the milk with the spoon and let it sit there.
That's literally exactly what my roommate would do. And it's weird to look at, but I feel like it works.
It's, you know what? It's... Yeah, it's fucking cookies and milk. Like, I mean, yeah, it's weird to look at, but yeah.
You got
to
do what you got to do.
Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. I'm not going to like, what am I going to hate on the fact he's making it a better experience to eat the cookie? No, it's great.
Is there anything worse in drafting than doing a snake draft and then just having your pick be made and having to wait?
It is terrible. Would you rather be the first or last pick with the back-to-back or would you rather be in the middle?
I'd rather be in the middle.
Yeah, it's comforting. Ken Jack, back to you.
Okay, so my number four pick is me and horny MILFs in my area because any and every time I'm on the old Orange and Black website, I just get hit with these ads nonstop. And they obviously are right for me because it's been years now and they just won't.
So my wife got into TikTok over the quarantine. And there's this TikTok video which like used the orange and black and yellow website, their like little jingle thing as like a comedic device. And she's like, I don't get it. And I was like,
neither do I.
I know. I was like, oh, I very much get that.
me neither, honey.
Fucking weirdo.
me neither. All right. That's a good. Hideo and Mickelson to that was quite the leap.
Yep.
Back to back picks.
Okay, my next.
The audience is next.
Oh shit, that's right.
Audience going. So I blew it. I did blow it because the one I wanted to pick first, I didn't see. So I'm losing my actual first pick. I'm kind of an idiot. They got movies and popcorn. Movies and popcorn. I still have a bag of AMC popcorn sitting on top of my fridge in a Ziploc bag. I'm going to sell it. If AMC shuts down, I'm going to go bring it to Corey Big Hoss Harrison at the Pawn Star Shop in Las Vegas and see how much I can get for it. And then mac and cheese is their number three.
The cameo from Chumley was like $175 when we were looking last night. It was incredible.
This week is the week of Cameo. We have been denied for the fictional debates on, I think, 5 cameos now. Mm-hmm. and it almost all exclusively has to do with people not wanting to say the word fuck. All right, mac and cheese. Good pick. Mac and cheese is great. It's also a reference to Friends. Ken Jack, number three. Third round, all right, your pick.
My number three is Rama Lama Lama and Kadinga Dinga Dong. Because what goes together better than that? Than Rama Lama Lama and Kadinga Dinga Dong.
I don't get it. I don't get it.
You won't, but some people will.
This is rough. Ken Jack, this is your conscience.
Your conscience speaking.
Your career is over.
You guys nobody gets don't watch this reference. You guys don't watch Grease. It's okay.
I mean, Grease is not something I actively watch. No,
you didn't watch Grease live. I did.
No, but I watched all the other live ones. Remember, you knew
why
you, know,
you watched
do you,
the.
Do you know how disappointed
Technicolor of Jesus one? That one stunk.
That was the best one in terms of staging and production. Do you remember the Rent one where the guy broke his leg in dress rehearsals and so they had to air the one that wasn't live, and then they did go live at the end, and that dude just looked like he fucking was just so distraught. I felt so
I think it was the way in which you presented the lyrics that I just it went absolutely over my head. Which is a shame because I'm gonna be honest, that was pretty good.
Ken Jack.
As it slowly came to me, that was pretty good. I think the delivery redeemed. Was just off.
You're redeemed.
Yeah. The conscience is telling you to continue whatever you have next. Was good. That was good. I actually will not. You did already kind of explain it. My number three, I really don't want to go with food again. But I'm going to.
It's your brand.
I'm going French fries again. And Frosties. A Frosty and French fry. Amazing, dude.
I want to go to actually.
Look, first of all, dunking the fry in the Frosty, that's, you know, at this point, this is a well-known thing. But just the cold of the Frosty and the sweet with the salty and savory of the fry. Frosty and fries. Yeah, I have to pick that. I have to go with that. I feel comfortable with that pick.
They should do a crossover with Fast and Furious. Boom, Wendy's. That should be your marketing guy.
Yeah, I agree. Trill, your back-to-back picks. Last of round three, first of round four.
All right, third round. I'm taking Andre 3000 and Big Boy, Outkast.
That's a good pick.
That's a solid pick.
Greatest hip-hop duo of all time. And then for my fourth pick, I'm taking getting a car wash and your car going faster. No, I'm just kidding. That does happen, though. I'm taking Bert and Ernie.
The fact.
Bert and Ernie. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who didn't love, like, Bert and Ernie were my favorite part of Sesame Street growing up.
They didn't like each other very much.
I love that. I love that tension. Even from a kid, I fed off that drama. I wanted the tea. I wanted to know why was fucking Bert such a dick all the time?
Bert just really never vibing.
Ernie was nice. Ernie was nice.
Yeah.
Bert, not so much.
Pleasant fella. Okay, so back to me.
Ernie, you did the Manscaped Lawnmower 3000 into the tub again. Didn't clean it out.
Ernie, you're felt
everywhere.
There's fucking felt everywhere.
Go to Michael's.
Mine, I'm gonna go with the old guys from the Muppets, Statler and Waldorf.
What the fuck is that?
Oh, the old guys. The old guys in the balcony from the Muppets.
Now let me look this up. Hold on.
They're a timeless duo. Always cracking jokes. They never die. Just yelling at people. Just two true genuine douchebags. Very this mean looks like people.
The too much tuna bit or something.
I'm Statler and Waldorf. I gotta go with them. Ken Jack, your round four pick.
All right, my round four pick is the meme of Max Goof saying, "Damn bitch, you live like this," to Roxanne.
I watched the Goofy movie this morning with my daughter.
Really?
And I was like, these animators were super horny at that beginning scene in Goofy movie.
Oh yeah.
I was like, that is not an appropriate dress.
Oh God, no, not for a children's cartoon.
Very weird. Yeah, that's always a good. What isn't there another one? It's like it was the Suicide Squad. Yeah, like he was her queen. And
yes,
he would do anything.
that one and the I'm hers, I'm he's. Those are my two favorite.
Oh boy, what are you gonna do?
Let's look at the audience. They round out their end of the draft. They went with SpongeBob and Patrick in round four. They had Bert and Ernie, SpongeBob and Patrick, and then five, Penn and Teller.
Okay.
Penn Jillette.
I haven't watched a ton of Penn and Teller recently, but I used to like them when I was younger.
They do a show of like, they try to figure out how magicians did their magic.
Interesting, I guess.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Okay, next up, Ken Jack, your last pick.
My last pick is a nice bubbly fart and a steaming hot shower, where it just vaporizes your fart and just encapsulates
it. I hate that. The water makes your fart smell awful.
They make it smell so much worse. It's amazing. I love it.
I don't get it, because the water makes your poop smell better than pooping like dry. But then when you fart, the water makes it smell.
The gas comes out and the steam in the hot water just vaporizes all of your fart particles and just entombs you in your gas. It's amazing.
All right. Well, you did warn us you were going to go off book. Bubbly fart and hot shower is definitely off book.
This will be funnier on the graphic than it was.
It's going to be hilarious. Max Goof might take it. God, this is tough. I'm going to Minnesota Vikings it. I'm going to let the clock run out on my pick and allow Trill to pick ahead of me.
All right. It's Calvin and Hobbes.
Oh, okay. Well, that didn't really clear anything up for me. I was never going to take it.
Max, this sock is awful crusty.
Here, let me waste a little time. I can talk about Calvin and Hobbes.
Yeah, talk about Calvin and Hobbes.
I mean, a lot of folks side on the fence that thinks that Hobbes came to life when no adults were around. A lot of folks are on the fence that thinks that Hobbes was a figment of Calvin's imagination when no folks were around, that Hobbes was never truly alive. And I'm on the latter side. Because for a cartoon strip that's so rooted in Calvin's imagination with Spaceman's Spiff and other types of concept strips, I think it's too centered in reality to have the tiger actually become real. In this essay.
Oh, there's another extended bit.
No, I bought Jeff some time to think about it.
Drake and Josh, that's my last pick.
Oh, fuck, that's a stupid pick.
Why is that a stupid pick?
Because you didn't really watch Drake and Josh.
Yes, I did. I have a sibling who is of that age.
Okay. What about the Sweet Life with Zach and Cody?
No, those two. I mean, Drake and Josh. Just Sweet Life. Nah, like I know Sweet Life well again because of the sibling thing. But Drake and Josh. I mean, they were on the Amanda Show.
Didn't those guys fall out with each other? Didn't those guys have a falling out? Are they friends now?
I have to do this because I always rate movies one extra point if it has Josh Peck in it.
Christ almighty.
That's why the remake of Red Dawn is a one and not a zero.
Who is the bigger one?
Josh.
I would say Josh for sure because he's a big YouTuber.
No, but he slimmed up, right?
No, yeah. You two had two totally different questions on that. Well, Trill mentioned which one was the heavier set one. Ken Jack.
Oh, I thought you said which one's the bigger star. One? Like, who's oh. the bigger star?
That, mostly because that was great because Ken Jack answered with the yes, he's bigger on YouTube simultaneously to Trill saying which one of them slimmed up.
Oh, they didn't miss out which one is bigger.
Yeah, but wasn't one like in his teen years? Wasn't he like a little like?
Yeah, it was.
Josh was.
He's a heftier dude. Now he's like.
Yeah, in really good shape.
You know those
Jonathan Libnicki program.
Yes, you know child stars are like, this guy's fucking hot now. BuzzFeed 90 pictures. Yeah.
Like who is the guy from Harry Potter that everyone thought like
Neville Longbottom. I don't know the actor.
Neville,
People are surprised. It's like, oh yeah, you waited for him to go through puberty and now he like doesn't look like a fucking awkward tween.
Mm-hmm.
He did an underwear ad or some shit.
I'm sure this is great for his body image.
Yuck, Neville, what's that white stain on your robes?
Dude, come on, man. I never make those types of jokes, and you're over here just making jokes like that. I never do that on this podcast ever.
Max never goof. Once. Max Goof. What a dumb name.
I'm
Maximum Goof.
I'm Shmeen my meat in here. Look.
Shmee Skywalker.
You can use the vacuum cleaner to help you.
You know, Goof, Max, if you sit on your hand, it feels like a stranger doing it.
No, that's it. No.
Hey,
no.
Look, let me try.
No.
It's everywhere.
No. We will not continue this podcast.
Show you my power line.
I have a line. You crossed it. Sit on your hand. It's like...
Oh man, Disney will stop the checks pretty shortly.
That's too good. Okay, fun pod. Sorry if this is a little shorter. We had major internet issues and it was very disjointed, and we just wanted to make sure we got the pod out tonight as opposed to tomorrow because it gives people more days to listen. We'll put up some votes for movies and shit, and we'll figure out what we're gonna review next. Next Thursday, okay, no, so next Sunday will be the King of Staten Island review, but we are going to be talking to Judd Apatow next week. So this Sunday, we'll put a vote up this side. That's it for Ken Jack and Trump. Jeff Lowe, we'll talk to you next time.
Have a good week at the box office.
The all-new Whoop is here, now more advanced than ever. Train smarter, sleep deeper, recover faster. Extend your healthy years. Understand your cycle phases. Now 7% smaller with 14 plus days of battery life. So your data never stops, and neither do you. Power your best performance with memberships made for every goal. Join Whoop today.